This is a Hipsters of the Coast podcast. This Doom Travelers podcast is brought to you by Hipsters of the Coast, your destination for magic news, strategy, and entertainment. And by Cast Haven, where you can build your magic collection like a pro. Visit casthaven.com for more information.
All right, welcome to episode 3 of Doom Travelers Weekly, the podcast where we play Destiny and talk about magic. I'm your host, Rich Stein, and I'm joined this week by Matt Jones.
Hello.
Dave McCoy.
Hello.
Matt Culpitz.
Hey.
And Joe, whose last name I should remember.
Schumacher.
That's right, Joe Schumacher.
Hey.
All right, and this week we are going to be rocking the Iron Banner. For those of you who don't know, the Iron Banner is a special PvP event that happens in Destiny from time to time. That means player versus player. So we're going to jump into the Crucible shortly and try to destroy some other teams and get some sweet Iron Banner reputation, which will let us buy some new toys. In the meantime, we're going to be talking about the worlds and stories of Magic the Gathering. Taking a little break this week from Fate Reforged, which has been the main topic of discussion since it just released, pre-released this weekend, and releases shortly after you'll be listening to this podcast. But we want to take a step back from Fate Reforged and kind of just talk about the world as a whole. So, Magic, of course, nowadays, we travel to a new world every few sets. Every block takes place on a new world. Lately, we've revisited a few worlds, but for the most part, we get a new world every year. This was not always the case, though. For the first 10 years or so of Magic's existence, the entire story took place on the world of Dominaria. So we're now about half of Magic's life on Dominaria, half of it all over the place. What do you guys think? Different world every year? Has it been working? Do you guys like the different worlds? Do you wish we were spending more time in some places?
I would like to say that I always, growing up, thought it was called Dominaria.
It might be. I've always pronounced it Dominaria.
Dominaria sounds correct.
Yeah.
I mean, who of us actually played when we were on Dominaria?
I'm gonna be learning a lot on this episode. I'm really excited.
I played during was fourth edition or was it revised? Or was revised fourth edition?
Revised was third edition.
Okay, so I played fourth edition, fifth edition mostly when I started. So I played on Dominaria.
Yeah.
So is there any sense of story in those?
Yeah, so Dominar, well, the core sets never had story until very recently, but Dominaria's story began with the Brothers' War, so Antiquities was the first set that took place in Dominaria that had an actual story to tell.
Yeah.
They moved away from that story a little bit with sets like Fallen Empires and The Dark. But they came back for the Ice Age. And from Ice Age all the way through to Onslaught Block, so we're talking 1995 until Onslaught Block is 2001, 2002, we're entirely in Dominaria. And we're telling virtually the same story until Odyssey. Odyssey tells a new story. So it's a huge difference, right? So nowadays we get one story in every three sets and that's it. End of story. In the past it was one massive story that was told in small chunks that were each part of a set. So
yeah.
How do you guys feel about a new world every year?
Only one path to victory, Guardians.
A new world every year, like, that's the only thing I've ever really played with,
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it seems logical. I mean, that like with a core set breaking up every new world, so like every time you go to a new world, you have a core set preceding it. Like that's just the way that I learned to play Magic. So like that feels very familiar to me. And it always it seems fairly effective. Like you tell stories in three acts, so why not tell stories? I mean, traditionally, and so why not tell Magic stories in three acts, and in each act gets a set. Like that's pretty intuitive. I mean, I think that they'll have an interesting storytelling conundrum now that we're moving to two set blocks,
right?
So theoretically, two worlds per year, and so like you. If you stop relying on the three act crutch but the three act analog of a three set block, it'll be interesting to see how their storytelling evolves from there.
Yeah, I think with the two blocks, and obviously if you know, asking about how everyone feels about having one new world every year plays right into having two new worlds every year, and whether or not it's a bit of an overload. But I think what we'll end up ultimately seeing is a lot more return to wherever stories, right? Because it's unreasonable, I think, to expect the creative team to come up with two brand new worlds on an annual basis.
For sure.
I also think there's tons of stuff to explore in the world. Or the other thing is, there's tons of stuff to explore in each plane that they create. It's also, they call them planes, they don't call them worlds. And I think that's an interesting difference than talking about them as worlds, because they're not. Like, it's not like you go to a different planet, you go to a different, like, realm of existence, right?
Right.
And but that's definitely the implication. That's definitely the implication of the word plane.
Right.
And like they call it the multiverse instead of the universe, so like they definitely are trying to tell you that they're different planes of existence, as opposed to, or like different realities, as opposed to just different worlds.
Yeah, which I think from a storytelling standpoint, it makes it much. There's much more potential when all of these different things can happen. And it seems to me that when they do create all of these worlds and planes and people to populate them, they don't necessarily take advantage of that, and they choose fairly redundant good versus evil stories consistently. And what I liked about the old Chan, when I played back in the day with the one world scenario, was that you got to spend a lot of time with this very linear history that they screwed around with a little bit. You sort of like got to know things in like a way, feeling way, not a thinking way or a reading way, and it was much more coherent and I think nice and interesting. And it didn't feel dumbed down. I feel like everything's so dumbed down.
Yeah, I think playing off of that, Dominaria felt like a really fleshed out world, right? After spending years on Dominaria from the Brothers' War all the way through to the Apocalypse, the worlds involved, which were Dominaria, of course, Wrath, which those of you who played Tempest or Mercadian Masks may remember the Wrath block.
Wrath was in Mercadian Masks?
Wasn't Wrath Wrath and Mercadia were the worlds. But I thought that Wrath was part of the Mercadia Mask block. I might be wrong about that. Wrath was definitely Tempest block, though.
For sure, yeah, I remember that. That's where
Grevin Hillvex is from. Yep. So for those of you who remember all those worlds, and of course, there wasn't a whole lot else going on outside of those areas, so... of course, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Phyrexia itself.
Yeah.
Did Wrath become Phyrexianized?
I don't think Wrath became Phyrexia. Wrath became the overlay for Dominaria that was used
But either way, I think that like when you did Dominaria the whole time, you got to go to in the Mirage block, you got to go to the tropics of Dominaria, and it implied that the plane itself wasn't a, you know, like a one-dimensional thing, like like Ravnica is an entire planet of cities. Like I always hated that about Star Wars too. So where the Jedi Council sits, the entire planet is a city. Like how does that even work? That doesn't make any sense at all. And it just seems shitty. Like all worlds have so much diversity to them, and it's not like the snow world, the hot world. It's so like generalized and like fine tuned for idiots that it really comes to that. I think there's a lot more that they could do there, and I think the audience is a lot more sophisticated than they think.
So by only being able to tell short stories, they're kind of restricting themselves in a way, but it's not even a restriction, really. It feels like more of a conscious decision to just not flesh out these worlds very much, because they really you don't really have to if you're not telling a big story, right? And I think getting back to where we are today with Tarkir really feels like I just feel like I don't know anything about Tarkir as a world other than that there's no dragons. And now there's going to be dragons.
Yeah. And there's kung fu guys. And there's kung fu guys. What else do they have? They have giraffes. And then there's like traditional Mongolian mythological or actual historical like tribal setups.
But like, and I mean, you learn some stuff, but if you have all these, you have these five tribes, right? Five clans, and they're at war with each other. And if they're at war with each other, they have to be relatively close to each other. So you've got each tribe seems to represent, through the non-basic lands, a different sort of geographical feature, right? Especially with the fetch lands kind of playing into that whole thing. So... sorry, I was just golden gunning some dudes. So
hard to leave the chat while golden gunning people.
So, you know, with that all said, it's very weird to me that you'd have these five clans in close proximity over such a varying landscape, right? Some of them are in the mountains, some of them are in the plains, some of them are in these nomadic desert type lands. You've got rivers. I mean, we now know that there's no oceans on Tarkir, which is very interesting.
And does that mean the whole planet or like the continent of Tarkir?
And that's the thing, right? Like, we don't know. Is it, you know, is the, I mean, what we're kind of assuming, right? Because when Sark and Vol is trying to explain to Yasova the concept of being a planeswalker, he says it's like traveling to a land across a body of water that's bigger than any body of water you've ever been to. And, you know, she says such a thing doesn't exist. Which leads us to believe that there's no ocean on Tarkir. Which either means nobody's ever seen the ocean, or it actually doesn't exist.
Or maybe the world's flat.
It could be, but I think back to Matt's point is it's such an interesting place, and there's so much that you can do in a place that it feels like such a waste to come here.
Well,
jam...
I think you don't... Sorry, go ahead.
No, go on. I mean, go on.
Like, you don't have to... I don't think that when you create a world, like let's say you create Ravnica, and there's all of these guilds that have specific ties to game mechanics, like Golgari, you know, they're the gross, swampy people who live in the sewers and have this sort of dark magic, and they recycle body parts and stuff. Like, that alone is interesting. Like, you can have a set that is about those people on their own, and all the intricacies of their societies, the goings-on between the characters, and you can have, you know, like, you don't have to have this epic narrative that is sort of generic and shitty and boring about Niv-Mizzet trying to do whatever the hell he was trying to do with whatever, and I just didn't care. And I actually find myself, whenever anybody talks about the flavor of magic, I think about how interesting the Herloon Minotaur is, just as a thing, and like what his face looked like, and what the like Herloon Minotaur society could have been like, and all of that shit, and how that was interesting enough, and they didn't need to go and make some really cheesy narrative construction on every single set to like keep me interested in the thing. I'm interested in being a powerful wizard shooting spells at people. Like, that's what I want to do. I don't give a fuck that Jace is the living guild pack. I don't even like Jace at all to begin with, because he looks like a fucking emo asshole. Like, I'm just not interested. You know? Like, bag of dicks for Jace. I just don't care. You know?
Yeah. No, it's
so, I mean, so like Ravnica's a totally, like, the architecture's fucking crazy that the artists come up with. Like, if you look at any of the world building sketches and all the art that they come up with to, like, get the flavor for everybody, I get shaking excited looking at those sketches, because it's so, they're so awesome and there's so much promise. And then you end up, like, hearing the story and you're like, oh great, the cons are trying to fight each other, oh, and they're gonna fight the dragons, oh, who gives a shit? And why are there dragons in Mongolia? Like, I just don't get it. Like, I don't get any of it. I don't give a shit.
Right.
Well, I mean, in my mind, the thread that kind of pulls together your dissatisfaction and the shift in block sizes and block storytelling is the transition from telling a story about a world, Dominaria, to telling a story about a ship, the Weatherlight, to now their story is completely focused around this group of disparate planeswalkers that don't really hang out together,
right?
Like, aren't any part of a real group. They're just like random characters that they made up for Lorwyn and, you know,
and like color identity purposes.
Yeah, and now those are the main characters through which every story is being told. So like Tarkir, right? It could be an interesting world, but it's not really about Tarkir. It's about Sarkhan, because Sarkhan is the planeswalker that's involved. He's the main character, and he hasn't really even been on Tarkir for a while. So like Tarkir is just this place that he's showing up to again, you know. So to me, like, it's that change in storytelling that explains why we've moved away from staying in Dominaria to going from plane to plane to plane, so that we can just follow these planeswalkers around instead of learning about a plane to a deeper level.
It'd be really cool if there was a cantina in some city on Dominaria where all the planeswalkers, like, secretly got together. It was like Doctor Strange's house, where it looked like a Starbucks, but then when you go inside of it, it's like a whatever Arcana, whatever the hell that thing's called.
Yeah.
And that's where all the planeswalkers meet after their adventures and, like, share their stories, and then each set could be the story of one of the planeswalkers, and they could be interacting.
Cool.
So there could be some kind of synergy between the planeswalkers and each other. Or even when they do interact, such as a Johnny and Elspeth. Like, I don't care about that either. And then I did care about Liliana and Garrick. They just, like, let that go. Like, how did that resolve? I have no... Is Garrick still running around murdering people? Like,
don't see lost.
Like, why would I spend time getting invested in one of these stupid stories, and then it doesn't even complete itself?
So that seems to be the thing that's going on, right? Is that they're telling stories about people now instead of telling stories about worlds. And so since the story is about the planeswalkers... they're trying to get us invested emotionally in the planeswalkers, right? And obviously having cards that represent the planeswalkers plays into that, right? So what's... so I guess... I think I can...
I just grenaded myself.
I think I know the answer for Matt, preference-wise. What do you prefer? World stories or people stories?
I prefer that it's done well and it's done really creatively. I love characters, but they deserve development, you know, and they deserve to not be linear tool bags. Like, they're just so shitty. Like, oh, Liliana's evil. Like, there's more. It's in the new Demonic Tutor art that has the Demonic Tutor carving the runes or the spells or whatever black magic is in Liliana's skin permanently forever. Like, there's more story in that one card than in, like, the rest of what goes on with Liliana. Like, it'd be so interesting to have that be a part of it. But it's touched upon and then not paid attention to.
Right.
And since they don't commit to, like, actual storytelling, they just, like, hedge. And so we don't get resolution. But we also don't get enough room to create stuff ourselves as viewers and players. It's like sort of forced how everything is and how what everything means.
Well, forced, I think the key is forced, right? So, like, these characters were not invented to be story, like, the crux of stories. These characters were invented for their color identities so that they could, be a card, a new card type with color identities. And I think a key part of character that Wizards is currently ignoring is context, right? So, like, you can't just drag the same character from context to context to context and have them be the same. And having the Planeswalkers change, like, they haven't really shown a willingness to change their main characters. Whereas, while the settings have changed and the context have changed, they've come up with awesome, like, minor characters. Like on Innistrad, the brother and sister, the ghoul lasers.
Geesa and Garoth.
Yeah, like those two were very interesting minor characters, mostly because of their context. You know, like that's the kind of that's what I'm trying to get to. Yeah, exactly. Whereas these planeswalkers don't belong to any of the worlds, and they're very rarely affected by the different contexts that they get put into. And so, like, you just lose a huge amount of character development and interest, like
It's like we get small pieces of what could be a very interesting story.
Enemy captured zone A. But they're not so small. Like, before those two characters became actual legendary creature cards, it was cool that you'd had, like, Geralt's messenger. You know, it's cool that they, like, showed up in the game in different parts,
yeah,
but they never actually revealed themselves, and I liked that mystery. And that's, part of my article this week was about that, and I liked that. They're like, I don't know, I can't think of any other ones right now. But it's always interesting to see where, like, a planeswalker shows up in the art of the card.
Right. I mean, you used to have cards like Limduel had a lot of cards in Ice Age, and, but, I mean, they gave some characters legendary cards, and that was alright. Characters like Gerard and the cast of the Weatherlights had cards. But I get what you're saying, right? It's they're just not doing enough, it seems, to develop Planeswalker stories, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's also like
they're creating these fantastic worlds.
Hey, Merkers.
Sorry, go on, Dave.
Oh, well, when they tie their stories to these planeswalkers, they tie you to characters you may already dislike. You know? Whereas, you're never going to get me to care about the planeswalkers that already exist because I don't think they're very interesting characters. Whereas when you stick in one world and you constantly go find new people that are part of this world, like you have a greater chance of finding someone that I might be interested in.
Yeah, I think Nicol Bolas is kind of an interesting planeswalker. He's probably good. I think Garrett could be a really interesting planeswalker, but I don't think we do a good job with him. What's the white one? Gideon?
Gideon.
Gideon is the biggest piece of shit planeswalker they've ever come up with. I can't stand that. Chandra's a little too steampunk to be interesting. No offense for our steampunk fans. Joe, sorry I said that.
I'm not a steampunk fan.
Joe, no man. Joe, you're safe, buddy. You can talk to us.
Well, no, I'm not a steampunk fan.
We're just developing your character, Joe. You are now a steampunk fan.
You know, I think you touched on an interesting point with Nicol Bolas as a planeswalker, because Nicol Bolas is more than just a planeswalker, right? He's a major villain of the Magic story. And, you know, when you say, oh, it'd be really interesting if, you know, there was a cantina where they all hung out, right? Well, in theory, the villains ought to be, in some way, tying the characters together. Kind of like how the better villains tie together teams in comic books, like the Avengers all get together to fight monsters, to fight Ultron, or the X-Men all get together to fight the Sentinels. You know, they're characters that are villains, and Nicol Bolas should be that sort of a character. And I think you're starting to see them hint on that sort of thing with the Eldrazi, but it's just on too small of a scale for my liking. Because it's only like two or three planeswalkers. It's not an actual group of planeswalkers.
Yeah. I also, just as an aside, the Eldrazi, I think it's funny that the name sounds Italian because one of them very clearly is pasta. And I don't think they did it on purpose, but it's hilarious.
The Eldrazi are an interesting enemy because they're seemingly all-powerful, right?
Right.
Wow, I just got Nova bombed while pulling out the golden gun. But the Eldrazi really ought to be tying together more of the story in a way that a central location would.
Whoa.
But we don't have a central location for all the planeswalkers anymore. So
does Dominaria doesn't exist anymore? It's like part of
no, it does. It does exist, and it was we last visited Dominaria for the Time Spiral story. So there's definitely a possibility that we'll travel to Dominaria again. Mark Rosewater has said he wouldn't be surprised if we do have stories in Dominaria again, but for now the creative team decided to take a break from Dominaria for whatever reasons. And I think that's fine, because I think there's other worlds that can be interesting in the ways that Dominaria was interesting. But I don't think they've figured that out exactly yet. Because
I think they just need less linear, less one-dimensional storytelling. Like, trust your viewers to fill in the gaps a little bit. Like, give us hints of things instead of just giving us the things.
Right.
I mean, yeah, they kind of do leave some to your imagination. Like the end of the Theros story with Elspeth hanging out in the underworld. Like, that's actually kind of an interesting little setup where, like, we never really got to visit the underworld. We've never really experienced a dead planeswalker who's not really dead. Like, is Venser hanging out in the underworld with her? I don't know. Like, I don't know. It's kind of an interesting way to have ended the
I think
like the underworld of Theros. It's not like, is that a universal underworld?
I have no idea. But anyway, that's just like something that they haven't spelled out is exactly what her status is. Like, is she like the first zombie planeswalker? Are we gonna have tribal planeswalkers now? Like,
that would be awesome. It's really crazy. Like, I hear people. Dan Black used to tell me all the time. He's like, "Well, I want to play Magic while it still has something interesting going on," and it's like. Or before it like has to, before it drifts away because people aren't playing it anymore, so it's not good. And I was like, oh look, I got a. That's great. It's like the Chatterwhite of Crucible.
Nice, congratulations.
And I was thinking like, there's no way that Magic could ever run out of potential ways to evolve and change itself.
Right.
There's just no way. Like even just giving planeswalkers a creature type, like that alone is something. That
if they made if, just yeah, if they made zombie planeswalkers, like I'd come back and play Magic for zombie planeswalkers. For a
while. There's definitely a lot of design space left in Magic.
Just like, what if they did a set where they killed all of them and then they brought all of them back as like a like they were all like they had to be red, black, green, black, white. Like they made one for every color, but it had to have black in it too. So it's, oh man, or green, black. Oh, come on.
Did they ever do a set that was only focused on certain colors? I took a huge break.
They did, and it was very bad.
Do you think they could do it better now?
I don't.
Rich, hold on. Which part of it was bad? The limited experience was bad, right?
The limited experience was a disaster. I want everyone to be in on this joke because Dave and I. So the block in question is Odyssey. Odyssey, Torment, and Judgment. And the way that block was structured is each set was very focused on certain colors or had less of a different color. And explicitly, Torment was very heavily black. And it really skewed the limited environment. Mark Rosewater's talked about it a few times. The general response to Odyssey from the players was very poor. And that's mostly because drafting Odyssey block was just a It was a very unfun experience because it was impossible to know what colors people were going to end up in, because all the good cards were in one or two colors in each pack.
But I feel like people like playing that block now.
There's definitely a nostalgia aspect to it, but I mean, if you think about it, I mean, Sangir Vampire was a rare that you could open in Torment. You know, Nantuko Shade. There was a cycle of
finally getting the respect he deserves.
There was a cycle of non-basic lands that would add black or another color to your mana pool, so long as you controlled a swamp.
This sounds like my favorite set ever.
Yeah, exactly.
Nantuko Shade.
What I was trying to go with saying that it was the limited environment that sucked. It wasn't necessarily the story aspect. What we have to keep in mind that Magic isn't a story, right? It's a game with five colors and a limited environment that is supposed to be served by every regular expansion set, right?
True.
So the reason the Odyssey block wasn't successful was because they tried to tell a story through the cards, but forgot that they were trying to support the five color mechanic. And it seems like they've made sacrifices to keeping the game stable, storytelling sacrifices, in order to keep the game stable and to keep every draft environment a fun, expected draft environment, you know? So that's like a huge limitation on their ability to actually tell a story.
It's true. Shit is mad hard because of all the whiny limited players out there.
Yeah, but I mean, they have opportunities now, like with Conspiracy and not really Modern Masters, but Conspiracy area and Commander decks to tell stories in spaces where they don't have to follow the five color, they have to support all five colors for the draft environment, you know? So that seems like a big space where they could actually perhaps start to tell side stories or non-linear stories or develop new characters in, like Duretti. Duretti seems like a very interesting character, and he was mentioned way back in the day because he lost his wife and he wanted to make artifacts to replace her, rebuild her as an artifact, and now he's a commander planeswalker, and that's the kind of niche storytelling that they could use these non-expansion products to do. Because that's not tied to a single world, that's not tied to a planeswalker that they've already developed that is just so tied to its color identity that they couldn't do anything interesting. So it'll be interesting now that they're printing a lot more cards than they used to, and a lot more sets than they used to. It'll be interesting to see if they can actually pull off some interesting storytelling through those cards.
Like you just set a world record just saying the word interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
I think there's definitely a lot they could do. Oh man, I'm getting sick of this guy sniping.
I'm getting killed.
Yeah, well, it's because I spawn with Icebreaker, so I have no ammo. Anyways, first world problems.
Yes, Icebreaker problems.
Yeah,
I just spawned and got sniped instantly. Also, that sucks. Lost.
Where is he?
I'm gonna go find that guy. He's over past C. If you're coming from A, he's past C.
Half their team is snapping.
You
captured zone A.
You know, on the whole, I think they do a great job with the stories and trying to please all the limited players, who I think are probably the whiniest of all the players that play Magic. And they also they're the ones that need the most tending to, right? Because they just open packs and pull cards and make decks out of these cards. If it doesn't work, you know, if that doesn't work, that's a miserable 3+ months for them.
Yeah.
It's true, and in the past, bad limited environments have directly led to a lot of negative feedback, but not as much as a bad constructed environment, right? A bad constructed environment can kill the game. And we've seen that before with Mirrodin, right? So Mirrodin was an attempt to do storytelling through the cards again, and this time it was all artifacts.
Nice job, Jim.
And the result was just one of the worst constructed environments ever.
Why is that? What was it?
Affinity.
Avatar.
Affinity was just a wretched experience.
Zone A neutralized.
So, you know, it's they've obviously gone to great effort to redesign the way they tell stories through cards. And I can't blame them, because it's definitely bitten them before. But I think they lost something along the way. And I think the dichotomy between telling stories about worlds and telling stories about the planeswalkers is where that line exists that they need to find, and they may have swung the pendulum too far in one direction in favor.
I love
them,
Russia.
You would, man. Freaking One Direction and Kelly Clarkson would be your favorite thing.
Sure.
but too far in the direction of telling stories about characters, and the exchange is that we don't learn and we don't get as many interesting things anymore about the world itself. And you know, you can see that in Tarkir, because everything revolves around Sarkhan's choice. Of cons and dragons, right? And it's a very linear story, because the choice he's going to make is already obvious, right? We all know he's going to choose dragons. He's going to save Ugin, whatever that means.
Getting set up for an unexpected plot twist, but that seems kind of outside of Wizards.
Yeah, I think at this point, Wizards tends to play the stories very safe.
Shit, I fell off the board again.
You know, there's a reason trope stories are successful, right? People are used to them. They're relatable. People are familiar with it.
Heavy ammo on the way.
It's something. It's a safe bet. And you know what I'd really like to see is, obviously, I think we'd all like to see them take a little bit more, a few more chances with the storytelling than they currently
do. I think they're a big company that needs to make a bunch of money to please a bunch of people, and I don't think they're going to do that. I don't think it makes any sense for them to do that. For them to do it themselves. Like, I'm all for it, because fuck money, fuck responsibility, but
right.
They would not feel that way. I wouldn't.
No, I think there's certainly no question that Wizards is under a lot of pressure to perform financially, right? They are the only successful part of that company, really, today. I mean, Dungeons & Dragons has started to come back, but...
Because the new Dungeons & Dragons is kind of sweet.
Yeah.
Just as an aside.
But I think Magic the Gathering, you know, there's a lot of pressure for them to keep doing well. And if they stopped doing well, I think it would... you know, they're afraid that things would get negative very quickly. So they don't take a lot of chances with the storytelling. And it's...
They tend to not take chances when they don't have to take chances.
Right. And again, I think this goes back to something we talk about a lot offline, which is that Wizards is very good at designing the game Magic the Gathering. But they have a lot of problems when it comes to virtually everything else related to Magic the Gathering.
So, Rich, you've been playing for a long time. You've been going to a lot of pre-releases. Have these new pre-release events increased your experience or understanding of the story behind these blocks, or are they detracting from the experience? Like, what have you felt that transition?
I think sometimes it goes a little too far. But for the most part, I think it's a big improvement in sharing what the story is with people. It used to be very difficult to ascertain what was going on without reading the books. But now they do a much better job, I think, of trying to immerse players in the story. That said, I think it's very hit or miss, right? Things like this pre-release, the Fate Reforged pre-release, where you're interacting and you're building, you're trying to save Ugin, is very immersive. I think the story of opening the Hell Vault when Avacyn Restored came out was very immersive. But some of the Ravnica stuff was just really not very interesting at all.
It was so dorky to have it end with everybody running in a maze.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? Who cares about a maze? We're doing all this, like, we can shoot lightning out of our hands and reanimate dead things, and we're going to run around in a maze? What are we, freaking some shitty Harry Potter knockoff? Like, what are we doing?
The story of Return to Ravnica was very disappointing, I felt.
I think the conclusion was very disappointing. The whole second or third part was real bad.
Yeah, and it's a shame because there was a lot of, again, there was a lot of interesting, there's a lot of interesting things they could do with a place like Ravnica. But again, we didn't get a story about Ravnica. What we had was a story about Jace and I guess somewhat a story about Niv-Mizzet, but really it was just a story about Jace.
Mostly about Jace.
Yeah. Jace, of course, is the most popular planeswalker.
Which blows my mind, because he's the silliest looking planeswalker.
He is the most beloved and the most hated of all the planeswalkers, which makes him the most popular. I'm not a huge fan of Jace as a character. I'm not terribly thrilled that he's the quote-unquote face of the planeswalkers. I think he makes it difficult to relate to planeswalkers, right? As a magic player. I think as a magic player, Matt, you said earlier, you know, you're a powerful wizard. You're throwing spells, you're summoning creatures, you're building these fantastic artifacts, you're erecting these enchantments that protect you or harm your opponent.
And I remember some early magic book that I read that was exactly that. Like, you were reading the story of a guy who was becoming a more powerful, like, duelist, essentially, right?
Yeah.
You remember that book where he was fighting in Arena?
Yeah, it's called Arena.
Yeah,
the book's called Arena. Yeah,
not that well written, but it was like that's what magic felt like to me too. And it's the only time I've really felt that the game was able to tell me the story of how I was experiencing.
Right. Yeah, and it's, you know, nowadays the story is similar but different because now you're a planeswalker.
One path to victory,
but I, you know,
just like a super wizard with special dimensional powers,
right? And that's why I think a lot of players relate to Jace, because that's kind of who he is. Or you relate to, you know, or you relate to Chandra, but
I just punched their entire team down, triple down on punches only.
But I think it's, you know, I think it's difficult to relate to the planeswalker story, the idea of being a planeswalker, and I think the pre-release really could do more to give you that planeswalker feeling, but I'm not really sure how. It's a very difficult prospect, right? How do you make people feel like they're part of something bigger instead of is there even a reason to do that?
I think it'd be cool if, and this is just, I just thought of this now, like, I don't relate to any of the planeswalkers because the planeswalkers aren't like a player, like they're not in this game, they're like characters in the game that I play, so it's hard for me to identify as one of them. And so maybe there should be, like, we should be called something else so that it makes sense to us, you know, like, we're this other thing. I don't know, that's just something I believe.
I think it's, yeah,
I definitely don't feel like Liliana. I don't feel like any of them.
Right, and that's a problem, right, is because I think that having the players be planeswalkers makes sense because it explains how we travel from world to world and meet these characters and take part of these stories. But at the same time, it's very much difficult to relate to being a planeswalker because the main planeswalker characters just aren't very relatable to a lot of people. And
you captured Zone B.
The ones that are relatable are kind of just tropes.
Like, is Gideon supposed to be super relatable to all the white men out there?
I suppose so. You know, he's a paladin, right? So he appeals to the honorable side of us. And, you know, and they all have their appeal, but, like, it gets very difficult to relate to a character like Tybalt, right? Or relate to a lot of these characters. It's just not very...
Damn it, you stole my heavy ammo, Dave.
I mean, what's... So these minor characters that they're making the planeswalkers, like Tybalt, like... Domri Raid, are they really supposed to be relatable? Because they're not really main characters, you know? They're just, like, side characters that were somebody made into planeswalkers.
Right, but that's the thing is... Planeswalkers are supposed to be the front and center, right? We're planeswalkers, we're front and center. So when you have these characters that are periphery, but they're planeswalkers... It kind of sends a mixed message because you're like, oh, these guys should be front and center, but then they're not. And I think that it sends a mixed message.
What defines a planeswalker in this game, right? It's having a spark, which allows you to travel from planes to from plane to plane, right? That's what defines a planeswalker. So is part of being a planeswalker being able to cast spells? Is that part of being a planeswalker?
No, it's literally just being able to travel between worlds. I think all of them so far use mana to cast spells, so I think it has to be both, really.
Does Garrett cast spells?
Yeah. He summons creatures.
True.
That's how Garrick casts spells.
I just thought he'd just smash with the wall.
He should.
He does make a bunch of beasts.
He does, right? That's his thing, is summoning the wild. And I think that's relatable, and I wish they would do more to develop the stories of the more relatable planeswalkers.
Yeah, I mean... It would have been, so if we were to recast Khans of Tarkir as a story about Sarkhan rather than a story in which Sarkhan, what Sarkhan's doing is the only thing that's going on.
Right,
So for example, we explore Tarkir through, say, Sarkhan's past or Sarkhan, he was there and now he's returned. So, like, either explore through his past or how he is now re-experiencing things that from his childhood, or re-encountering people like Zurgo, who knew him before he left and apparently disappeared.
Midgar and I just equally we just both did our super subtle thing, so it was awesome.
But anyway, I think that'd be an interesting way of recasting Khans of Tarkir as an exploration of Sarkhan as a character. Either through his past or through him re-experiencing his past by meeting people who used to know him, or experiencing things that he remembers, that kind of thing. But anyway.
Heavy ammo available.
Yeah, we're beating the dick out of this team, though.
Yeah, we are winning pretty
good
at that
lost
time.
In a row.
So I guess we've talked a lot about the different things. We're getting down to the end here. Final thought: if you could change one thing about the way we do storytelling for Magic, what would it be, Matt Jones?
Matt Jones. One thing I would change. Secure. I don't know. I would make characters less than. I would not make it like good. It just seems good versus evil all the time. Good versus evil. Good versus evil. And I think that's actually a huge problem with our society. That all the stories seem to be revolved around good versus evil.
So you want to see more gray area. Less black and white storytelling.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. Dave, what would you like to say?
Well, just to build off Matt's, like a conflict of interests rather than just like a conflict of good versus evil. You know, like you can have a white villain, right? But and that's usually based on that character's interests, like the fact that they want something that they think is good through means that other people disagree with, that kind of stuff. So I think that would be an interesting way of telling stories. But the one thing I would probably change. Is this requirement that the planeswalker that's central to the story is the only part of the story, but that it's not really about them. So instead of making Khans of Tarkir about Sarkhan, but mostly just about Sarkhan finding Ugin, like make it about Sarkhan and like actually explore Sarkhan and his relationship to this plane. Rather than just using him as a driver for the plot, that would be perhaps hard to do in a card game. I don't really know, but
but
that would probably make it a lot easier to relate to these characters and perhaps tie together some of the weaknesses that we've been exploring to.
So explore more of the how the planeswalkers deal with conflict on a personal level or on a more of a deeper level than what we've seen, rather than just. Telling and kind of get more into their relationship with other things, right? Because right now you're right, they're pretty much just vehicles for telling the story. Matt Culpitz,
they just don't have a soul
on
their own. I don't think they could stand up on their own.
Matt Culpitz, if you could change anything about how we do storytelling for Magic,
I would make it a lot simpler. One character, one card. One color. It should be called the Culpit Starter.
I'm gonna put in order for five.
There you go, Joe.
I mean, I didn't even know that we're trying to tell you a coherent story in this game. So I'm pretty sure they're just trying to sell you guys more things.
They are always trying to sell us more things, and it's true. Yeah. I feel like some of those things that they're trying to sell us that are extraneous and we haven't even touched on things like the dual decks or conspiracy, those sorts of products. They are just pushing more commander, especially more planeswalkers. Less. It's really more characters, more and more and more characters, and we're getting less and less of their story. And I think
I'd rather know fewer things better than more things.
Quality over quantity, right?
Yeah. I just want to know where is Karn from and how can I play him more often?
Yeah. That's really I think
before we go, I want to hear something about your pre-release experience. Is that you and Dave, I think, are the only two who went.
Oh, I actually was not able to attend, but...
Oh, you didn't go?
No, I was not able to attend, but Dave, you went, right?
Yeah, I think the pre-release was pretty standard for pre-releases. I was talking to other people who ranged from just casual, this is the only thing I do in like organized Magic, to other spikes like me. And there seems to be a general fatigue about these seated packs and like this forced like identifying with a color or a clan or a character kind of thing. It doesn't really seem to like serve the story anymore. It's not novel anymore, and like you don't quite understand why we're doing it. And then the whole opening Ugin's vault thing was kind of
Ugin had a vault too.
Yeah, opening something happened, But I couldn't tell if it was just because... Yeah, I couldn't tell if it was just because the employees were tired because they did the midnight release and the 9 a.m. release. But, but yeah, I mean, the cards were fun. The fact that it wasn't a real sealed format was weird, but it was still fun to play with a lot of new cards, so I can't really complain. You kind of have to take them for what they are, which is just like a chance to play with cards that no one's ever played with, not really a coherent experience.
Yeah, I think the color, the seeded pack thing is probably... worn out its welcome. I think there's something to be said. There's something to be said for seeded packs when there's a lot of complexity, such as in a set like that has multiple colors. So like when you have a two-color set or a three-color set like Khanzatark here, I think it's important to have a seeded pack with non-basic lands, with mana fixers, and that sort of thing, because you don't want, you want people to be able to actually play with the cards, right? You don't want anyone to feel bad because their pool didn't have the right fixing, or their pool didn't have access to the right colors. So from that perspective, I think it's sensible. But in general, yeah, I don't think there's really a lot of need for it anymore for a set like Fate Reforged. So hopefully they'll take a look at that and they'll make some improvements.
Yeah, I mean, despite the shortcomings of the actual, like, that what Wizards give stores, like, Luis and the 20-sided store do a great job every single time during these events, so, like, they're always fun.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it comes down to being able to have fun with the other people there, and that means having a good environment to play Magic in, and 20-sided store does a good job of that, but not everyone does. So, and final...
Was there anything you wanted to change about the stories, Rich? I don't think we got to you.
I feel like the just the lack of cohesion between characters, right? And I think the biggest thing about Magic is, as a game, is the relationships that you get to build with the other people you play with, right? I think for a lot of people, the hugest thing about Magic the Gathering is that we all get together, you play this game with your friends, you travel to tournaments with your friends. And if we're all planeswalkers, then we're planeswalkers who are friends. So I'd like to see a little more cohesion, not just Elspeth and Ajani, right? I think, you know, even this Ugin, Sorin, and what's her name, Nahiri, the Geomancer, Nahiri, even that really feels just like a forced alliance. Rather than an actual friendship amongst planeswalkers. So I'd really like to see more cohesion between the characters. That's what I would change.
That sounds great.
And that's, yeah. Final thought before we sign off for the episode. What is your favorite plane for Magic? Matt.
Innistrad.
Dave.
Man, I've only been to, what, this is my fourth plane I think I've experienced. so, I mean, in
Dave,
terms
did you play
of...
Innistrad?
I didn't play Innistrad itself, just Absent Restored. So
you should just say Innistrad.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Honestly, I really enjoyed Theros, not because of the story, not because of the particulars of the story, but just because of the environment. Like, it was easy to relate to the Greek trappings and everything, so I quite enjoyed that.
Mine is hands down Ravnica. The original Ravnica story was just the setting, I think, was far and beyond the deepest world setting that Wizards has ever come up with, even though it's just one city. I think the ideas, the concepts of the guilds resonates a lot with a lot of players. And I think in general there's so much storytelling you could do in a world like Ravnica, and I really hope that over time we, especially what's better outside of it, because there is a wasteland of sorts outside the main city of Ravnica.
That's where the sluiceway scorpions hang out, right?
Yeah.
Lost the leaves.
It's where the Nephilim are from. It's where a lot of things happen. So yeah, Ravnica. And I think with that we can call it a close. This has been episode 3, and if somebody could remind me how to shut this thing off, that'd be great.
Oh, shit.
Hey Guardians, thanks for tuning in to the Doom Travelers podcast, where we discuss Magic the Gathering while playing Destiny. You can find more at doomtravelers.com or visit hipstersofthecoast.com for additional Magic content. Thanks to Matt Kolpitz and Joe Schumacher for joining us in the Iron Banner this week, and thanks to my hometown Seattle Seahawks for making it to the Super Bowl once again. For my co-hosts Rich Stein and Matt the Obliterator Jones, I'm David Bones McCoy. See you next time. Now they pass William Howard Taylor.